For April the 22nd, 2016, we talk about the Dark Souls board game, Damned, and we ask you about your favorite glitches and exploits. Welcome to Level 147. My name is Cole Russ.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Here we are. It is, man, it's hard not to measure this show against the other more successful shows on the network.
It's the DC.
I suppose. We just can't get our shit together. No, this is a week after a huge week, and this is a huge time for the network. We probably have some new people listening this time around.
Yay! Hi, new people.
Yeah.
Hello.
Did you guys see that Bonfire Side Chat hit number one in video games on iTunes?
Yeah,
so that's exciting. I'm not saying that by way of bragging. I'm saying that by way of I hope that it makes our community and family bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And better.
Yeah. And just do, get in here, do a little bit of cleaning house, you know? You know who you are. No, I don't mean that. No, it's I'm super excited about it. Like, it was very surreal yesterday as I was watching that happen. And even now, like, we've dropped a little bit, but we're still in the top 10 on video games, which means we're still in the top 10 on the old games and hobbies. And so, like, that's front page exposure, and that's amazing.
Yeah. Definitely. Very cool. Thanks to everybody who went out there and voted and stuff. And said things.
We got a shitload of reviews.
And if you're listening to this, thanks to the people who came in on that and then jumped over and tried another show. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Indeed.
It's all good. So, yeah, that's the big thing that is happening here. Do we have any other kind of anecdotes or stories from the previous week or so?
While Dennis is waiting for his new kid to be born, my nephew was born. So, yeah, he was born about a week ago, something like that. So
it's raining babies.
Yeah, babies everywhere. It's just raining over here. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the middle of the Houston flood, like the fifth one in 2 days. Yeah.
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 But no, for anyone listening to this, I have already had my kid.
Yeah.
By so then. Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah.
So, hi, future me. Hi, Milo.
Yeah, last week you were talking to Big Game saying, oh, this is going to be the last episode I'm on for a while. By the time this next one comes out, or by the time we record the next one, I'll have my new bouncing baby boy. And I was like, well.
Cold bet against you.
Yeah. Still etched one more out there.
Oh, man.
Recording wise and release wise, last week was my last, so I'm gonna stand by that statement.
All right, okay. I suppose whatever.
however I can rationalize it.
Yeah. Huh. Well, let's go ahead and get started, because I see some pretty cool some pretty meaty topics in the old Slack channel here. So we've got the usual kind of show for you. We've got the brief, where we talk about video game news. We've got multiplayer, where we interact with the listeners, and then we've got the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing. And of course, we start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see here. I'm going to pull this up. Jala, give us your story.
Sure. GameStop is launching a publishing division. It's called Game Trust. And creators, the first game that's supposed to be coming out is called Song of the Deep. It's supposed to be coming on July 12th. And it's about a young girl who has to go look underwater for her lost at sea father. The other types of people they've got signed on are creators such as the makers of Trine, Deadlight, and Ratchet and Clank. And it's supposed to be operating separate from the actual stores, because, of course, like, they're competing against the other publishers that they sell in their GameStop stores. So that is a, you know. But they're not trying to target, from what it looks like, a AAA type games are looking more like on the lower end of the spectrum there, like towards, I guess, going towards a little bit more of the indie or whatever kind of market. Yeah. Not so much, you know.
Yeah, I love the quote, this is a largely ignored space.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really? Like, that's right. You know? Do tell.
This is a space we have largely ignored, and we're going to make this broad exactly. sweeping statement to make it sound like we're not just targeting a market that we really can't get in on, besides like selling Steam cards.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, like it, when I read this article, it made me wonder, hey, whatever happened to that? Because I had posted or I talked about on a prior brief about Amazon when they were going to do their publishing thing. Did they ever actually release anything? Like, whatever happened to that? Amazon getting into game development?
That's a good question. They did like game development software, but I don't know if it's been long enough for anyone to churn anything out. Oh, okay. I haven't heard anything from it. Okay.
Yeah, I know that like they still have like Garnet Lee is going out and doing like appearances for them and stuff. But yeah, that is that is all that I know of about their publishing deals. Like, this isn't as far afield for GameStop as I think people think. Like, GameStop owns, or at least owned a while ago, Kongregate, the Flash game site.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so they made some kind of ham-handed attempts to monetize that. But that is, like, that it'd be kind of like them owning the Flash version of Steam. Like, Kongregate is a huge platform for this stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, in terms of doing this, I think they've said several times that, like, well, we're not looking at getting into the publishing business. So this goes against what they said before. But, like, that's not something you can really hold against them.
Yeah.
Well, so they're talking about wanting to do these kind of smaller games, but then they're bringing on the, you know, Insomniac. Like, does that really jive? Like, do they understand what they're talking about? Are they giving maybe this is a safe harbor for an Insomniac team to go do something crazy and off the wall, maybe, but everything I know about GameStop just screams, no, this is not going to turn out well.
Yeah, like, for me, it just seemed, when I was skimming through the article, I'm just like, you know, this really sounds like GameStop doesn't really know exactly what they're talking about here. Like, they're just jumping in, but they're kind of really just off base with some of their commentary, you know? Mm-hmm. Kind of like how you said, is the very first thing you said, Dennis, when you're like, they're talking about it being this largely untouched market. Since when? Like, where have you been? Like, okay.
Well, they've been salivating and trying to figure out how they can get their hands on that market. And so
this is
the plunge.
there was a great tweet that I read. It might have been Griffin McElroy. It was like, we're pretty sure that GameStop will find a way to open and then sell as new digital content.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, they're a big company, and it's easy to take pot shots at them, but I know how they operate, and it's true. We'll see how this pans out. This will take like 2 years to actually bear any fruit. Maybe good. I don't know. Like, they've got talent behind them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's a failure, it will be an entertaining failure.
Yeah.
And if it succeeds, then everyone wins.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see starting in July.
Let's see. Dennis, how about your story?
Yeah. So this is about an exploit that has been discovered in The Division. That has allowed people to kind of skip major portions of an end game raid and get really, really high level equipment that should take, you know, I don't know about months, but a long time to build into in a relatively short amount of time. And it's kind of been a minefield for how they handle the results of this and what they're promising to do to players who cheat or how they kind of rebalance the game from here. So first off, Ben, you've played The Division, right?
I have not.
It's David.
Is it only David?
David. David.
Oh, okay. So he misses. So I was going to see how prevalent, if he's seen any of this, where people are feeling like they have to use the exploit, because if they don't, then they don't have the gear that everyone else has in the PvP servers, and they just are getting crushed, which is an interesting thing to me in the first place, that the gear could sway that so heavily in a shooter.
It's the it's the MLB defense. It's the steroids argument.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, initially the developer came out and said, hey, we're going to punish everyone who uses this exploit. But then they, you know, the people using it said, well, we're not hacking the game. This is all stuff that, you know, they're not inserting any code. They're not cracking anything open. Like, it's literally just using flaws in the game's coding. So if you didn't want us to do this, you should have made the game a little bit better.
Right.
And, you know, in this day and age, and we'll get to this with multiplayer, in this day and age, it is much easier to, like, you know, patch out problems. So even if they do fix this, though, what do you do with the ill-gotten equipment? Do you take it away? Do you give it to everyone? Like,
do we know what kind of, like what is required to take advantage of this exploit? Because the closest analog that I can think of is Destiny, like that magic cave that people could shoot into,
right,
to farm basically anything that they needed for that version of the game. And that to me said more about what kind of game Destiny was. Yeah. That, like, okay, well, we'll just sit here at this literal Skinner box and, yep, you know, press this button because that's what we're here for, not for anything around it. And so, like, Bungie just kind of had to close that up as an embarrassment and didn't really do anything about it. But I don't know if that is, if it's the same thing, or if this is like, hey, if you jump once in this corner, you get God mode.
No, you use character abilities that warp you through a wall. Mm. And I don't think that's their intended purpose, but just like if you use them, it's the Survivor Link and the Mobile Cover skills. Mm. And I don't know what those are, but you can clip through walls and avoid trigger points that would make the dungeon way, way harder. That, you know, that wave of enemies just doesn't spawn. And you wind up, you know, being able to get through in just a couple minutes a dungeon that's supposed to take hours.
Yeah.
So that's what people are doing. And it's one of those things where, like, I don't know how extensively it was QA tested or anything like that, but it is a legitimate argument to say, well, we're just kind of, you know, speedrunners do this sort of thing all the time, right? Like, this is literally, it's turning a dungeon into a speedrun.
Yeah.
And so there's a healthy community around speedrunning, and like that. So are you going to punish anyone who tries to do any kind of speedrun? Like, where's the line on that? How do you, and again, now, even if they patch it out, do they take away everyone's gear, or, you know, what do you do? So it feels like they're flailing a little bit. And, you know, there's angry players on every side of the issue. So all in all, just a tricky situation for them.
Yeah, I mean, it just, I know what I would do, but I'm not a professional at this, and apparently neither is Ubisoft.
Yeah.
this is weird because, like, Ubisoft has done multiplayer games, obviously, but I don't know of any other, like, MMO-style thing like this where, you know, the repercussions of something like this extends outside of just one match. Like, you can have people exploiting stuff in, like, Rainbow Six Pandora, or sorry, Splinter Cell Pandora tomorrow, and that mm-hmm. shows how old my most recent experience in multiplayer is. But, like, and that would suck for that minute, but that doesn't, like, ruin the entire player economy.
Right, whereas now this supposedly really difficult to get piece of gear is just available to everyone who's willing to cheat a little bit. And even then, it's not, you know, you're not, like I said, cracking anything open to do this.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
What, it seems like they could fix it if they just moved up the floor of the game so that all, like, base guns had, like, those sorts of stats, and then just increase the rare stats to be even higher.
Yeah, like inflation, or just nerf anything that could have possibly dropped there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I think it was a special release, though. This was supposed to be like, hey, here's the really cool endgame thing. So if they nerf it, then I think there's kind of a vacuum for cool endgame content. And it's interesting, even though they've apparently patched, you know, this problem, people are finding similar exploits faster than they can smack them down. So now it's this race of how to kind of quote-unquote cheat to get your gear before Ubisoft finds it and shuts it down.
Yeah, it's that scene in Vegas Vacation where Chevy Chase is trying to plug all the holes
in the
damn wall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Trying to plug the internet holes. Yeah, I should have thought about that a little more before I said
it. It's like whack-a-mole.
Yeah, there we go.
Just an interesting story for the dynamic between the publisher and the players on both sides of the issue. Yep. It's gotten a lot more complicated from back in the day where you sent out a disc and that was the game.
Let's see. Ben, tell me about the Dark Souls board game.
Yeah, this is a follow-up from last week. They released the details of the Dark Souls board game. In a word, it looks hard. So I suppose that matches up with the game. The only part that they showed was a boss battle. And it takes place on what they call a node system. So think of maybe like a triangle lattice and the shape of a church building, maybe from a top-down view. And that dictates where the boss can be and where your players can be. And your main stamina, your main stat is you have stamina, which is also connected to damage that you take. And then you also have a meter for your Esser Flask. And then in addition to that, each player has four different stats. I'm not 100% sure what all of them do, but some of them are for like health saving rolls and some of them for attack and things like that. And so basically they just showed a short demo of how the boss works. So basically the boss will have five different playing cards that are drawn out of a set of 10, and they'll have different move sets on them. And then if their health is decreased by half or more, an additional card is added into that deck that's like one of their special moves.
Oh shit, that's great, because that happens all the time in Dark Souls.
Yeah, and so I have very limited experience with Dark Souls, but I have seen, I think I watched some of the run through during Duck Spring, and I saw one of the bosses that operated like that too, where once the health dropped between half, they had a new move that was really damaging. So
yeah.
So far, it seems to be pretty accurate to the game and that, and kind of how the fighting mechanic works. So on a given player's turn, they can attack the boss and they can move away from the boss. On the boss's turn, typically their base card will be some sort of movement towards the player and some sort of attack. And so if the player is in their zone of attack, then they'll get hit and they might have to do like some sort of saving roll, or they might just take damage outright.
Yeah,
but in addition to that, after on the attack card, it'll show the boss's weakness after the attack is made. So their left side might be like weak after a certain attack, or their right side might be weak after a certain attack.
And does it stay the same for each attack? So you know, like, this is where I need to be after they do this.
Yeah, so it's on a turn for turn basis. So like immediately after they attack, the next person can try and go to a certain side of them and attack them there. And then maybe try and get away to get some space between the boss and them.
Yeah.
The boss will always target the last person's turn, whoever that is. So it'll always target the most recent person to probably attack them.
Yeah.
So,
You're rolling some wacky ass dice on this too, it looks like.
I think it's 0-1-2s for the most part.
Okay.
And the specific video that they show, the boss's health is 30.
Yeah.
So each die roll will consume your stamina, and then that's tied to the damage that you can take. I don't know if that's one-to-one with the game or not.
Yeah.
So if you have really low stamina when the boss attacks you, then you're going to take more damage and you're more likely to die.
Yeah, that is like shield rules almost. Like in the game, if you have your shield up, the damage is converted into stamina depletion. And then if your stamina bar runs out, that transfers into health, and also you get staggered.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then the only thing I haven't seen is the Esser Flask. You have like a meter for, so if you're, you know, away from the boss, one of your actions is you can take Esser Flask. I imagine that just restores health, but I'm not exactly sure how they do that in this version, since the stamina bar and the health bar are on the same track. So they might need to tinker around with that some more. But
is it common in board games for dry erase to be deployed on?
Yeah, so I think this is just kind of like an alpha sort of kit. I think in like a final one, you could just have like little cubes as markers to track, that sort of thing.
Or like the glass bead kind of things.
So I would say that's just kind of a early testing type game mechanic. So
yeah, The anybody who's curious about this but is sensitive to Dark Souls 3 spoilers, the boss that they use in the video to illustrate this, I'm going to need to watch this with the sound on so I understand. Like, you're doing a really good job of explaining it and making it sound true to the Dark Souls like pacing. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting really excited about this too. But the boss that they use is one that was featured in previews, but doesn't spring up until late in the game. So if anybody's sensitive to that, pay mind to it. But
okay, yeah. The one thing that I'm interested in is I don't know what's outside of this boss fight. You know, because there has to be a bigger game there. You know, but
yeah.
I don't. They claim that there's exploration in the board game, but. I don't think they've revealed that aspect of the game yet. So
yeah, they make the board looks like a clue board a little bit, like with different rooms and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's the kind of thing where like you have different rooms and the, you assemble it as it goes along, like procedurally. I'm not sure.
Mm.
Huh?
Yeah. I think it's very interesting to use a shuffled card deck as a very rudimentary, like boss AI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of, you know, automatic GM or whatever is the eternal problem in these kind of games. And that's a very interesting way to solve it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I'm curious about this. I mean, it's not really a surprise to anybody that when this comes out, I think it's targeted for spring 2017. We're going to try and do an episode about it. So whoever's around, either of us will probably be invited to come play it. Okay. Yeah. Just to see, but yeah, that is, That is cool. Thank you for relating that, because mm-hmm. I would not have thought to seek that out on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then my last one here, the last story is going to be kind of a brief one, but it's one that I'm kind of excited about. Apparently, it's rumored that Rockstar is going to announce Red Dead Redemption 2 at E3 this year. Okay. And I'm jazzed about that. I heard about this a while back, but it just didn't make it onto the show. Other stuff was happening around, but there is a leak, like an off-screen image of a map from the game that shows that this is going to take place pretty close to where the previous one happened, where Red Dead Redemption 1 happened, like slightly to the east of it. And there are details in the map, such as like where the railroads and stuff are, that that indicate that this is probably going to be a prequel as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
The way I understand the Red Dead Redemption story is that it would kind of have to be.
I mean, unless you wanted to just take it to somebody else who wasn't John Marston, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But come on now. Would you really want to do that?
Man, I want to, who's the kind of the secondary lead in that, the ranch hand woman.
Oh gosh, yeah, I forget.
Name like Daisy or something like that.
Let's say yes.
Yes, she was. she was great. Ben, you're leaving me to die here.
Yeah, sorry, I can't remember any of the characters' names. I know there's the Sam Elliott lookalike. I know there's the old kook. Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, this is man, E3 is like right around the corner. Like it's going to be at the beginning of June, but this is high in the running for something that I'm really jazzed about. And that would mean that this would be Rockstar's first entry into this console generation wouldn't be a Grand Theft Auto game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you think, Ben?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I went in pretty cold with the first Red Dead Redemption and it was enjoyable. I mean, it's, you know, heavily dependent upon the story, because I feel like with Red Dead Redemption, since not a lot of people played Red Dead Revolver, it's kind of like the first like dive into a world like that. And it was a completely like new environment for a lot of people. So I think they'll have like a bigger hurdle this time because a lot of people understand that sort of environment. So it won't be as novel this time. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was Bonnie. What was her name? Bonnie McFarlane.
There
we go. So something like Bonnie or Daisy, something old timey like that.
Ends with an E.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer section, where we put a question to you, the listeners, and you respond. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, so we hinted at it with the Division story, but it's about glitches and exploits, which were, you know, almost finding and using them was a game unto itself. In previous generations, so console generations, that is. So what are the most memorable glitches and exploits that you've used or heard about, etc.
Yeah, and I'll pick up with our first responder here, Amanda, who writes in saying, I remember in Halo 2 climbing into the mountains on a couple different maps, though, in order to be a sniper in team deathmatches with TVs in different rooms with teams of friends pitted against each other in high school. Was it totally cheap? Yes. Did everyone do it at least once? Totally. Again, everybody else was doing it. Yeah. That is the defense. That is the defense. Gets you out of all the trouble you need. Yeah.
No. See, even if I could get up there, I still can't hit the broadside of a barn as a sniper. So,
well, see, the problem is most of those, if I remember right, at least the way that worked, there were only a couple of spots you could get there to do that. And most people knew where it was. So you only had like one or two shots maybe before they honed in or before a counter sniper got to you.
And could you get down from there easily?
I can't remember. Like with the regenerating health, fall damage wasn't really that big of a deal.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Jella, what does Russell say?
Russell says, Knights of the Old Republic 2 has an infinite XP glitch. My light side character refused to use it because it's cheating. During the second playthrough, both I and my character succumbed to the dark side.
Even role-playing the metagame. I love it.
That's awesome.
Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I'm not a big fan of glitches, like the duplication in Oblivion, or exploits, as it feels like cheating, especially in multiplayer. But exploits that require skill, like rocket jumping in Quake or long-range shooting in FIFA, impossible to block if done right, are fair game. My favorite was chaining unblockable moves in SmackDown, Here Comes the Pain on PS2. Great if done right and infuriating if done to you.
So it sounds like if the exploit is more difficult to do than the regular move, then it's fair game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was gonna say, chaining unblockable moves sounds like just standard fighting game fare.
Yeah. It sounds like using the system.
Yeah. Which, you know, everyone's had that moment. It's like, well, you started that combo with me, so I'm going to be a spectator the rest of this game.
Oh.
But don't worry, it'll only be about 5 seconds long.
Yeah, I was going to say for the 2 seconds you're left alive, you're a little more generous.
unless it's Mortal Kombat, and then it's, you know, go make a drink.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. What does James say, Dennis?
James says, I remember in XCOM Apocalypse shooting down a UFO and collecting what looked like a green spinning top from the wreckage. I think it was an engine. As I mouse dragged it to my inventory, I noticed that another one was still in its place. Cue 10 minutes of dragging infinite engines to XCOM. Turns out they were very expensive, and I could afford to fight the secret alien war many times over. The Greys didn't know what hit them when their invasion force was hit by my fleet of ships more advanced than their own. That's literally the only way to win XCOM.
Especially one of the early ones like that.
Yeah,
God.
He's found it. That is, yeah. That is great.
Awesome.
I just like the idea that there's an alien ship out there that, like, how many engines did they say to put in this? 500 backup engines? It's like a typo, but the factories, you know.
Kerbalian space program.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Tim writes in saying, sometimes when playing Halo 2 online, I'd match into a game with people who weren't really playing, just looking for glitches. I asked them why they were doing this, and they said they, quote, wanted to get places nobody had ever been before. Huh. I didn't and still don't really see the fun there, but hey, whatever people are into is cool with me, I guess.
Yeah, this blows my mind. Like, how... If you want to do that, that's, you know, great. I totally get the exploration side. Why would you say I'm going to start a team deathmatch online to try to do this?
Maybe it was the only way they could get into a room together, and they didn't have enough people to juice the party.
Maybe, yeah. I guess if your partner that you're doing it with is like in another state or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't imagine a more difficult way to try to hunt for glitches. Do it while being hunted yourself.
Hey, you know. Right.
Well, yeah. whatever floats your boat, man.
Jala, what does Franz say?
Franz says, I don't know what combination of mods caused it, but one of my first playthroughs of Morrowind had my head and most NPCs' heads replaced with skulls. I'm sure you'll fit right in, the guard at the census office told me.
Finally, a kindred spirit. Because that's the way skeletons laugh, you see.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Pretty good. See, I like that. That's just good. That's just good, clean fun. Ben, what does Steven say?
Steven says, quite recently, I have been having some connectivity issues with Dark Souls 3. So when I finally did get someone to summon in their character wouldn't animate. But enemies would aggro to them, and they would still cause damage, while my squishy mage could sit back and enjoy the show of a statue of a person floating around and killing things by proximity. Don't worry, this was my second playthrough. My first was totally legit.
See, that just sounds like a regular Dark Souls enemy.
I just like the idea that this game has been turned into someone playing with army men.
It's like a little miniatures game. It's a preview of the board game.
Yeah.
Dennis, what does Sam say?
Sam says, when I was a teenager, some of my friends discovered that blowing smoke into an NES causes a lot of hilarious glitches.
Huh.
Yeah. So he specifies in the replies to the comment that it's the same glitches that you get if you wiggle a cart around, just in a more fanciful manner.
Oh, yeah. It's like doing the cartridge bending on the N64 where Mario like stretches out and like stutters to the world and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. But it's like saying, I want to do glitches forever if you're going to smoke into the actual machine.
Huh. I want to turn my SNES yellow faster.
Yes. The SNES tries to buy cigarettes and then asks you to peel off its reset button and put that on the counter.
The SNES couldn't find or couldn't buy cigarettes for itself until 2009.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Let's see here. That was... you, right? Wait, who's... Yeah, okay, cool. Why do I keep track if I don't keep track? Chase writes in saying, The Elder Scrolls Morrowind absorbed all of my free time for a summer. As school was about to start back up, I had gotten to the final boss of the Blood Moon expansion. After a few days of fighting him, I ended up getting him lodged into a pillar in the center of the room where he couldn't attack me, but I had a clear shot at him. There was a moment where I considered rebooting the game and beating him fair and square, but that feeling quickly passed.
It's like, I think it's the flame lurker in Demon Souls.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to beat him is to just like lure him over to a log on the ground that he gets stuck on.
Yep. that guy's a dick, though. He deserves it.
He's so hard to beat. But I took the low road on that one. I can totally understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, that reminds me of like Bloodborne. During the first couple of months that was out, they had a memory leak glitch. That if you left the game running, which if you were playing it on a PS4, which you had to because that's the only system that was out on, but like mm-hmm. if you just didn't turn off the system and just put it into sleep mode, eventually the memory leak would happen and it would cause the bosses to behave erratically and usually make the fights a lot easier. So It was one of those situations where going back through and replaying it for the show was actually harder than playing it initially.
That's crazy. Wait, going back through, you did or did not use the memory leak?
Oh, like they patched it out, you couldn't.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I was like, man, the back half of this game is really easy. And actually, the back half of the game is pretty easy. But it got harder.
Not that easy.
Jala, what does Carlos say?
Carlos says, Demon Souls Stockkeeper Thomas glitch. It was great for cosplay runs, i.e. my Katniss build.
I assume that was like an item duplication glitch, maybe. I don't know.
I kind of want to see this Katniss build now.
Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, in Final Fantasy Tactics, using the power of algebra, along with a wonky leveling/unleveling system, you could create soldiers with monstrously high stats. Honorable mention, Kingdoms of Amalur gave you the ability to punt deers into walls hard enough to clip through the geometry.
Oh, wow. And he shares a screenshot.
That is amazing.
Yeah, that looks like one of those like fake toys that you would like put in the side of it. Like you would put half of a Cadillac into the side of a building to make them. Yeah. Huh.
Oh, man.
Yeah, deer deserve it. Let's see here. Yeah, that's and
still sore from Until Dawn.
Yep, I think so. Yeah, I didn't even realize it. And Kingdoms of Amalur had a real life glitch where you could just fund an entire game with money from Rhode Island.
funny how that works out.
Yeah. trick is you have to be a baseball star. Again,
I was going to say, I never quite understood how he was involved.
I think he ran the studio.
Yeah.
It's baseball all around. Like, anytime cheating's involved.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, gosh. Dennis, what does David say? There we go.
There we are. David says, Mass Effect 2 had an infinite loop in a conversation that let you max out your Paragon and Renegade points. It was nice to cheese some conversations later on. I was not aware of this. I wonder where it is.
Yeah, that's I'm not sure either, and I'm sure that is the kind of thing that would be patched out eventually. But I remember in Mass Effect 2, there were a couple of decisions I couldn't make to like save particular people because of my lack of Paragon or Renegade points. So that does factor in. Womp.
Yeah.
Huh. Hmm. Let's see here. And I'll pick this up with Gus, who says, first things, guys, I said something really nice about the show and the network. Thank you. Now onto the topic. My copy of Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic on the original Xbox had a game-breaking glitch for me. On the water planet that's home to a race of amphibious aliens who are neutral between Sith and Republic. Let's see here. A mission involving a trial where to get the Sith revealed as the guilty perpetrators, you had to break into the Sith embassy/base to find any evidence at all in which you find teenage aliens that have been kidnapped. So you're breaking in there to find evidence that they were kidnapped. But for my playthrough, the kidnapped aliens were nowhere on the map at all. I went through all the rooms to find them, only to find out when looking up on a walkthrough that there was a bug that can prevent them appearing in the base. So I left the base and was arrested and executed for breaking into the Sith base. So that you guys know, I saved my one save slot when I entered the base, and the autosave did its job when my character got arrested. This is before I learned about having multiple save files to prevent this, a lesson that I learned the hard way.
That's rough. That's a longer game, too.
Yeah. And that's, it breaks out into, like, a non-linear game at that point, but, like, which planet has that been?
Manon.
Yeah. Is that one of the three you can go to after Dantooine?
Yeah. Okay. So depending upon when he went there, yeah, it could have been like 50 hours in the game, or it could have been like 10 hours in the game.
Yeah, man. How sad is it that we're trivializing a loss of 10 hours?
That's not trivial to me. That's like a full indie game. Yeah. At least one, if not several.
Yeah. These games.
But I will say, I think it's just one mission that you're missing out on. I don't think you need to complete that to complete Manon. But I don't know.
That's good. If you've saved after the point you got arrested, then you're screwed.
Yeah. Everybody has those moments where you learn the importance of safe hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here. Let's round everything out. Jala, what does Alex say?
Alex says, most recently, I've made use of the triometry glitch ? Above FLS in DS3 to get early access to some mid-level loot, somewhat offsetting the game's punishing difficulty.
So this is an instance where the Dark Souls community's penchant for using acronyms helps, because the name the name of that area, even though it's like super early in the game, is actually a spoiler. But it is total nonsense. Let me parse this for you. In the game's hub world, there are some things you can do outside of it that usually require buying a very expensive key. You go up there and you get some better than average loot, and so you have to either get at that late in the game or exploit that in order to get up there. Yeah,
is that one of those things where you're like, you're 100% sure it's an exploit, or is it one of those things where it's like, yeah, I'm sure someone will be crazy enough to try to make this jump?
I don't know. Like, so by talking about triometry, there are just a bunch of trees, because the world of Dark Souls 3 is just like Bloodborne, cluttered with a lot of geometry and kind of just a visual information that I could totally see, like, the complications of that geometry working against you. With the hitboxes and such, or working for you in this case.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So thanks everybody for writing in. Why don't we do ours? Dennis as the person who threw this out. I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, so for me, it was Battlefield 2 Modern Combat on the PS2. There were a couple of exploits in this game or glitches where by firing your gun at just the right time while walking into a wall, you could clip through it. And then the way that it was programmed was that the bullets started from your gun barrel, like from the end of your gun barrel. But then your hitbox was your actual body. So what you could do from the, you know, from inside the geometry that you clipped into was poke out your gun barrel and be able to shoot at anyone. And anyone trying to shoot back at you would not be able to hit you because the wall would stop it.
Oh, wow. So it wasn't checking for collision on the gun barrel.
Right. So, yeah, you could kind of poke through and basically had an invincible wall to shoot through. One way wall.
So they had programmed wall hacks into the PS2 version of that game.
Basically.
Yeah, that's some horse shit. Jesus.
So it kind of, you know, in the maps were all kind of like capture the flag-esque. Mm-hmm. But it created all these secondary objectives because it was so widespread, because that was before they would really patch stuff out, that it, you know, there was kind of like the main objective, that there was always a big skirmish around, and then there was always a big skirmish around whatever this point was, people trying to get in or defend from people getting in or kill people from it, and it just made for a really weird and sometimes hair pulling out frustrating experiences. But yeah. I did it along with everyone else.
Wait a minute. So that is like, that was the console version of Battlefield 2, which is the modern one. Is that the one where, as like the single player or the multiplayer, where, you know, in order to emulate squad combat, you actually, if you had line of sight to an ally, you could switch minds with them?
Hot swapping.
Yeah.
Yep. That was the one that introduced that concept. And that worked really well in single player. And then they just didn't use it at all in multiplayer.
That makes sense.
Because everyone was controlled. There was also some crazy stuff around if you could get the little mini helicopter spinning it the right way, it was impossible for a homing missile to hit it. so you'd get these people that would get master like flying these little mini choppers in, like constantly spinning in a circle, so that they would kind of like swing around and fire at you and swing around and fire at you and swing around and fire at you while just, you know, kind of spinning like the hands around a clock. And no one could hit them, and they were just trying to take these little pot shots at you as they went around on their merry-go-round of a helicopter. Just really, really weird fights. Thankfully, there was only a couple of the maps that had those copters, and then a couple of the maps that had those wall exploits. So, you know, it was not totally rampant through every game.
Yeah.
But any map that did have the chopper or the wall exploits, that was all anyone did.
Ah, man. Again, it gets codified.
Yep.
And people would yell at you probably for not doing it if they had voice chat. Like, come on.
Yeah.
you're not playing the game. Click, 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 click.
Yep.
Angry. Jala, how about you?
I don't actually have like an exploit story, but I have a definite glitch story.
Okay.
So once upon a time when I was playing my original Lunar CD on Sega CD, I got to the end boss, and at the end boss, you have to fight multiple forms and you can't save and all that stuff. Well, there was this one fight where in that sequence of multiple fights at the end of this game, the music would just stop. And then, like, I went through and I was like, huh, that's weird. But then I just kept playing it and I killed him. And then the screen froze and it wouldn't do anything. And so I was like, what the hell? So I turned it off. I turned it back on. I got back to the same point that it did the same thing again. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, seriously. Because then, of course, it just would stop at the end of the battle every single time. Whenever the music stopped, it would just do this. So I was going nuts trying to finish this game. And I ended up having to open up my Sega CD and take the game disc out and put it back in and then like close it up again while on that screen.
Oh, so
like,
it would seek back to the beginning battle of that track?
No, like the music never did turn back on, but the game wouldn't continue unless I pulled the disc out after the music stopped in that one fight. And it was the weirdest thing. And I don't know if it was my unit or my specific disc or what. So I have no idea to this day if that was just a special glitch just from my particular setup, or if that was like, you know, everybody, like an epidemic type thing with everybody who had the Sega CD version of that game. So that was frustrating as hell.
That worked. Like how did that fix it?
That's what I was trying to figure out. I was just like, how in the hell did that actually fix the problem? That doesn't make any sense. And then the rest of the game plays like normal. And I went through and I beat that game multiple times. And every single time I got to that point, I had to do the same thing. I don't even know. So that was really a frustrating experience. So that was my most acute memory of any kind of glitch ever. Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah.
The end.
I like the idea that the coding on this is just so horrendously tangled that somehow the flag for finishing the fight got tied to the music changing.
I know. And it's just like, okay, by then the music should have just cycled through again or something. But, and I don't understand the logic of you open up the thing, you take the disc out, put it back in, close it back up, and then it works fine. I don't know.
Yeah. That's distressing though, just to think, oh, I'm not going to see the end of this again after I've sunk so many hours into it.
Right. This is a JRPG, damn it. Do you know how long it took to get here? This is like version 4 of this boss. I'm done.
Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I couldn't really think of one. The closest I could get was in Halo 2, there's the noob combo, which was kind of like a glitch where if you shot someone with a plasma pistol and then shot them in the head with a BR, kill them, and you could do that really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that might be more of an exploit maybe than a glitch, but yeah.
I remember there was something like, it was like BYB or something like that, where you could essentially you could double hit, and that would usually be enough to take most people out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the noob combo especially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was very, very heavily frowned upon in our circles. Yeah. Mine is pretty old, actually. I remember, like, this is me being like super young and playing Final Fantasy 2, 4 in the United States. At what point do I have to stop saying that? Because if I say I was playing 4, that isn't actually the game I was playing, you know, when I was at, you know, 7 years old or 8 years old in elementary school. But like, you kind of have to, I don't know. The naming convention is kind of weird.
There will never not be someone who is confused by it. So yeah, it's going to have to specify.
And there's never not going to be somebody who, like, if I just said I was playing 2, they're going to be like, oh, did you import it? And it's like,
right. Mm.
So I was playing Final Fantasy 2/4 and having a lot of trouble because it's a very hard game, even in its American dumbed down form for a little kid like me, like I was at the time. And I remember going on to like GeoCities sites and finding out about like an exploit where you could duplicate items. And it was the first time I'd ever, you know, basically thought of the notion of how to do that. And so because I was playing this game on rentals, it's like, well, I'm going to do this so I can get over this stuff and see more of the story, see more of this game. So picture me 8 years old, you know, doing this crazy swapping in order to get as many of, the elixirs and stuff as I need to get around this. And it actually ended up working out in my favor because later on when I decided to play it without the glitch, you know, when I actually owned the game, doing that actually taught me about using weapons as items. And this is something that is not apparent when you're playing the game, but you can use your weapons to cast spells. If it's like depending on what kind of like rod it is or what kind of sword it is, most of them have some secondary effect that never wears out. So it's like another thing you can equip. So using that exploit taught me this whole mechanic to the game that otherwise would have just been completely foreign to me.
Cool.
It's just exploits teaching exploits all the way down.
I don't know if that's that last one's an exploit. I think it's just a system that was poorly communicated.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I want to throw it back. There's one I thought of. And the first time I played Morrowind, I read like a FAQ on like how to level up all your stats within like the first 15 minutes of the game. And that was pretty fun to do for a while.
Yeah. I did that with when we did it for WoF, when I was getting ready to finish the game, I was like, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get my stats up to absurd levels. And then I jumped from the very south tip to the very north tip through all of the loading screens. And I was like, well, that was fun. I feel like I've gotten as much out of Morrowind as I'm going to. Click.
Yeah. And now I've won Morrowind.
Oh.
Well, is that the one that has the bones of the guy who like jumps with all the, you know, super jump scrolls and then doesn't realize that the landing that's going to kill him.
He's fresher than that. You actually hear his scream when you walk out of the first town. Yeah, and then he lands and you pick up that scroll, and that's a wonderful kind of instruction about the way magic items work, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for writing in and responding to that. We really appreciate it. If you want to participate in future multiplayers, just go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and look for those prompts on Tuesdays sometimes.
And I will say, if you want to participate by suggesting questions, you're more than welcome to. I'm always happy to brainstorm my own. But if you've got something you would like to see discussed or get other people's opinions on, throw my way on the Slack channel, and we'll see if we can work it in.
It should be noted that Dennis very graciously takes care of that,
most of the time.
Yeah, like 99% of the time it's Dennis coming up with these and putting them out, so it is we're very thankful for that too.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past week or so. Jala, it's been so long since you've been on. I want to throw off to you first.
I've done some stuff, so okay, I'll try to be brief.
Things, man.
I'll try to be brief about a few of the things that I've touched on, because I don't have a whole lot to talk about with them. Guild Wars 2 Super Adventure Box returned for April Fool's Day. That is the 8-bit parody world that they made that, you know, just makes fun of old NES games and stuff like that. And it looks basically like Minecraft, more or less, is what a lot of people have compared it to. I played and streamed some of that with Conrad on my Twitch channel, you know, where I'm Jala-chan. I also have that up on my YouTube as well. So that's a thing that exists. It's archived. So that's something that you can go look at if you missed that. Also, Raising Ojipakle, which I talked about before, is a stupid iOS app where you raise
the middle-aged man in a box.
Yes. And it turns out that they turn into different things after a certain point.
Mikhail's like Pokemon.
Mikhail's turned into a cow and mine turned into a squirrel. And once you raise it to age 10, you can birth a new Ojipakle or continue to raise your current uncle baby. So like mine is almost level 30 now. So he's getting up there. He's actually looking his age now, or starting to. So anyway, the game also comments on what time of day you play. So if you play in like, you know, the middle of the night, it's like, hey, you work really late or something like that. I also found out that there is another app that's related to this that's just called Finding Ojipakle, which is a very simplified version of the game that all it is hide and seek with the Ojipakles in like your apartment. And that's all it is. And then like you find new ones as you gain levels.
Is it an ARG? Like, is it altered reality?
No,
but just, if you're looking through the camera and it just puts a little Ojipakle in a corner, chasing around the room.
People send actual people dressed as them to play with.
Right.
You.
Well, oh my God, I went to YouTube and I found that they have like a Ojipakle song, because it's apparently also on 3DS, and the song is super catchy and gets stuck in your head so quickly. So anyway, I've found many Ojipakles, and I played that for a while. I got bored of it after a while, of course, as I do, but that was a thing that happened in the world. So that's one thing. All right. So I also finished streaming BioShock, the original. So I did that. Yay. I was very sad that when I was playing, I found that you couldn't smoke yourself to death. Because like it takes your life away when you smoke, and I had like a sliver of life left, and I'm like, oh, there's a pack of cigarettes, let me see, can I kill myself? No, it won't let me kill myself, damn it.
Yeah, we call that getting deported to flavor country.
Right. Well, anyway, my overall summation of this is that there are some good ideas for the story, but the execution leaves a lot to be desired, at least in my experiences. I mean, if you want me to be invested in your story, don't drop me in knowing nothing and being skeptical and then wait until the bulk of the game is over before you drop the good stuff and then have it like keep going after that into some bug net shit. Like, what? It was like, whatever. I mean, it has a lot of atmosphere. It plays solidly. I play a story that's better written in this world, but this one was not the one that I was looking for. So,
if that's the case, I'm curious if BioShock 2 would be a better fit.
Yeah, and see, I didn't want to jump right into that and just be like BioShock the hell out. So yeah. I decided that what I was going to do was just leave up a vote and let listeners tell me what they want to watch me play before I play BioShock 2, just to give myself a break. And they decided The Witcher, which is a very long game, and I don't really like how the combat is. Like, I started it, and I streamed, like, the prologue, and I have been super busy since, so I have not gotten back to it.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't like the combat. What the hell with that combat? Like, it's basically, like, an Infinity Engine game, but like trying to be a QuickTime event. What? Like, it's weird.
This
it's
is
really
the,
weird.
The first Witcher?
Yes, yes, okay. The first Witcher. Wow. And I'm like, oh, this is weird. I don't know about this. So I don't know, but I haven't really seen enough of it to really give it a chance yet. So apparently John Fitch is a very big fan of the Witcher lore and has read all the books. So he was in there when I was playing the prologue, and he was just giving me all this backstory that I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. So I'm like, okay, you just need to like be in here every time I do this, and you need to tell me things, because I don't know what the hell's going on and why I give a damn about this guy and why it is his hair white, but then his chest hair is black. That's stupid. And whatever. And so on. Like, you know, so just overlooking that. So anyway, if you want to see me play all these old games that everybody else played except me because I was on hiatus at that time, then you can find me on Twitch, you know, under Jolichon. So that's the thing. So yeah. I did play some other stuff. There's two actual, you know, games other than that. Damned, I played this with aforementioned John Fitch and also Chris, listener Chris. It's a room escape with a monster out to kill you, and it's co-op where there's up to five people and one of you is the monster. So there's different monsters that you can choose to be. There's a lurker, a phantom, a little girl named Mary, and then a fallen, which looks like an angel statue with one wing. And it has different types of play for each one of the monsters. So the lurker toggles between like a ghost form and a physical form. And when you're in ghost form, you set traps and you can't be seen by humans, but also you can't see the humans either. So like, you know, everybody's invisible to everybody else. In physical form, though, you can't set traps at all or move through doors. You can see everything, but you can't, you know, you don't have any agency to like move around very much. So basically what you have to do is set a lot of traps all over the place and then wait for them to get sprung and then notice where the traps have reset and then, like, you know, switch into physical form and then kill people. So as a phantom, you move fast and you're blind, so you have to rely on sound. You're always visible to humans. All the players can see you. There are random traps that spring in the levels where you play as the phantom that help you figure out where the players are, but you have to go by sound only, so that's kind of interesting.
Wow.
The little girl Mary teleports randomly from room to room after a certain amount of time, and you don't have control over that. She just automatically teleports, and she's really, really slow until she sees a human, at which point, like, her, I guess her rage meter goes up until she, like, goes into fury mode, and then she, like, you know, runs at them screaming like a banshee and, like, rips them into pieces.
What's it like to play as her?
Really slow and lethargic, and, like, you're just looking to see if you can find any of the lights, because the humans have flashlights and stuff, and they have to, like, find batteries and try to find keys and solve puzzles to get out. And, like, as her, like, you just have to look to see if you can find humans. And if you do, you have to get into the, you know, get to the point, position yourself to where you see them and you can build that rage meter so you can lunge at them. But of course, if they see you, they can bolt out of the room as soon as they see you. And then you're kind of screwed. And then you have to, you know, like sneak up on them, basically.
Like, it's a different form of waiting for them to be careless, it feels
like. Yeah. And then the last one is actually probably the most fun to play, at least to me. As a fallen, which is the statue angel thing, you set traps and you put clones of yourself all over the place. And You can't see humans until a trap is triggered or a clone spots them, but that's when you see them. And then you have like a certain amount of time to go run over there, and you have like 7 seconds to kill them before you toggle back into incorporeal mode again. So you have like a really brief amount of time to, you know where they are and then get them. And the statues, apparently from the player's perspective, look just like you do when you come into physical form. So they don't know if the statue is really you or a clone. So, and then you can like sneak up behind them and kill them. So yeah, it's pretty cool. The one sad thing though, is that at least from when I've played, I've only played with a couple of people, and John specifically wanted me to play the monster. He wanted to be the human, and I'm like, okay, whatever, that's fine. You be my prey. But
that's funny, because I'd be fighting to play as the monster.
Right?
Yeah.
It's fun. Well, anyway, humans seem to have a distinct lack of agency, but that's probably because there was only like one or two of them playing at any given time. Like, if I had a full party where we had four humans, they probably could have survived long enough to get out before I could find them. But, you know, like, as it was, there was just like no way for one human to match up with a monster. So, you know, like, I would like to play this game again, but like with a larger group of people. Yeah. And it's just really at that point, it becomes scheduling and everybody having a copy of the game. But, you know, like, it went on sale pretty recently and it wasn't all that expensive. So, like, if this sounds interesting to listeners, hit me up, let me know, and wait for it to go on sale. Put it on your wish list and get it on sale. And let's totally play this room escape thing with monsters and stuff.
The more the merrier. So, like, like an explicitly horror themed Evolve is what that sounds like.
Yep. Yep. So
do you know which monster you're facing each time you play, or is it random?
I think you can randomize which monster it is, or you can pick what the monster is. And okay. I also believe that you can either specify a person to be the monster, or you can randomize that where you don't know going in if you're going to be the monster or not. So
when you start the game, you know if you're a monster if you don't have a flashlight then, I guess?
Basically, like, your screen looks very different if you're a monster versus a human, so, okay. You know. Yeah. But, yeah. So that was a thing that I played recently, and I encourage other people to try it out. It's fun. The developer's still working on it because the Fallen monster was added at the end of last year, so they're still working on it. I think it's been around for a few years now, but they're still doing stuff to the game. So, I mean, it's not a dead game. It's not dropped. So
it looks really good.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun. Ben, you need to play something other than Rocket League, and you need to play it with me. You know this one time, this one time when Ben's internet was bad, he was like, "Let's play Rocket League," and I say, "Okay," and then I get into the game, and we invite other people, and then his internet dies, and I ended up playing Rocket League with everybody but Ben.
Were they strangers or were they listeners?
No, they were listeners. They were listeners. Anyway, so okay. If there's no more questions about Damned, I'll tell you about the last game.
Damned sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. I recommend it. We should all play. Cole, you need to play this game. It's fun. Okay, so anyway, Unrest. Unrest is a game about diplomacy and intrigue set in India. And it's basically the whole setup is it's ancient India, and there is tension between humans and Nags. There's famine. The king and queen are assassinated, and, you know, there's unrest because there are Nags from that empire that have fled the Nag empire and have come to the human city and are living in the slums. And, you know, there's race.
Should I know what a Nag is?
Yeah, you're going to need to define or at least spell your terms.
Nag or Naga, depending upon where in India you're from, is a race of lizard people, and they are from Hindu mythology. So
they're humanoid top half, snake bottom half kind of things.
They look basically like snakes through and through, but with arms and legs.
Okay.
And they wear clothes. So there. Anyway, there are multiple different characters, and the story skips around from, you know, character to character. Like, you start out and it's you are the princess and your king and queen mother are basically about to die, but you don't know that until, you know, you play and, you know, 5 minutes in, and then you find out. But, you know, then it skips to somebody else and it plays through part of their story, and then it skips back to the princess, and then it goes somewhere else. So, I mean, it kind of jumps around from part to part to show you this is a poor girl who lives on a farm out on the outskirts of town, and this is the mercenary who's employed to protect the, you know, regent who is currently in power that actually was the person who assassinated such and such, you know, and all these different roles that you get to play throughout the whole thing, and you get to make decisions that impact the overall how the entire story plays out, but also how your specific story plays out. Like, you play a priest and you get to choose it, you know, who to give medicine to, and do you stand your ground or give, you know, the medicine up to the black market when you're accosted by some people in the slum and things like that. And so it's really kind of cool because it skips between different points of view and has a lot of interesting story beats that play out. But overall, the overall cohesion of the entire thing is only just so-so because it skips so much from person to person. I mean, it does come back around and kind of try to finish out the original theme of what was going on with the princess and whatever, you know, the rise back to power that you're trying to enable. But, you know, it's kind of open-ended at the end what happens next, because, you know, even though she, at least when I played through, did get back into power, you know, she still has racial tensions and, you know, poor people who are starving and things like that that she has to overcome in the future. So it's an interesting game. I'd like to see another game like it, but more polished and longer. This game was about 3 hours start to finish. So I would like to see this fleshed out, but then also a little bit more cohesive for sure.
Have you tried Broken Age?
No, I have not.
It's very adventure gamey and slow paced, but it's got the same kind of like skipping back and forth between two stories aspect to it. Your descriptions made me think of Broken Age, so might be more of what you're looking for.
Cool. I like this because there isn't really like, it's all conversation based and all role playing based, where you take different tacks and you have different meters that show you, like, say for example, how suspicious they are of you or how disdainful or whatever, and these things obviously affect what your next story choices will be depending upon how they react to what you do and say.
You mentioned how short it is. Does it feel like kind of like a Way of the Samurai situation where they have intentionally designed it to be short so you can feel motivated to play through as many of the disparate paths as possible?
I don't really feel that is so much the case. This game, I wasn't part of it when it was first launched, but it was a Kickstarter campaign type scenario. Yeah. And I believe that this is their first game. So I think it's more like, you know, their first publication rather than, you know, they intentionally wanted to make it short so you can go through a billion different choices so much. I mean, like, it's not cohesive enough and polished enough for me to think that this is just like, you know, all intentionally done this way.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So, yeah, but it is, I would definitely recommend it. And it was a lot of fun to play, and I will go through and play it again eventually, because once I started playing it, I wanted to finish, you know, each little chunk, and then the next one would start, and I'm like, but I want to see the end of this one too, you know, and then I just kind of get into what I was doing. And then when I would make a decision and it was like, oh no, I can't go back and you know, change anything now, then it makes me want to replay it for sure.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it looks, so for anybody who's listening to this who hasn't gotten to like a Steam page, it looks like a more like a hand-drawn Ultima Online. Like, it is a really far out man, kind of bird's eye view, like isometric top down, and you're like mousing your character around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. I'm curious about what else this company has done.
Yeah, I don't know, but I am interested. Like I said, I mean, if they made another one, as especially if it kind of continued in this vein where it's in an atypical setting, that's awesome. So, you know, I would definitely look into another game that they were to publish, especially if it was in along the same vein, because this is more role-playing focused than a lot of things that I've come across. And then, too, the choices that you have are at least varied enough where it doesn't make it feel like it has a canned response. Kind of like in a lot of visual novels, you kind of feel like you have a canned response, like you only have two choices. Okay, well, I don't like either of those choices, but I guess I'll pick this one. Because that's the one they seem to be leaning me towards. This one doesn't feel like that at all. And sometimes when I thought I was picking the thing that would do the job, no, I was wrong. So, no, like the characters and all the NPCs and stuff all have very distinct personalities and react very differently to things. So it's really cool. So
Their other game, the studio is Pyrodactyl, actually came out like a couple weeks ago.
And
earlier in April here, it was called Good Robot, and it is a fast-paced roguelike shoot 'em up, which sounds as a
totally different. Yeah, totally different. Okay,
diametrically opposed to the experience you are describing.
Right. Oh man. Well, I hope they go back to doing another thing like Unrest. So,
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jala. I'm going to go ahead and do mine real quick, just because it is. This is going to be really short. It's nothing really new. I beat Dark Souls 3, and I'm not going to give really any more details than I did last week, because I know people are sensitive to spoilers, but it's good. I like it. I have some problems with the story, but overall, it really feels kind of like a culmination of a bunch of stuff they were trying to do. And yeah, it is a downright gorgeous game. You just have to give it time to get out of like the here is a brown and yellow castle. this game has some of the most stunning skyboxes I've ever seen in a video game.
So that was a big change for even Dark Souls 2, was that compared to the first Dark Souls, it was not afraid to be colorful and bright. So you think Dark Souls 3 improves on that even?
On the balance, probably not. Dark Souls 3 has like these really shining moments, but overall it kind of leans into a little bit of the same dark dreariness that like even Bloodborne does for a lot of it.
And then tell me if this is a spoiler to say one way or another, we can leave it, but does it end finally, or is there kind of a sense of closure of the epic conclusion to the trilogy, or is it kind of setting it up to go on and on?
I'm going to refrain from comment.
Hard pass. Cool.
Yeah. So I know that's frustrating. It's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because there are people out there who already think I've spoiled something. And there are people out there who are saying, why in the world would you even bring it up if you were not going to say anything about it? Yeah. And it's a tough situation to be in, because like I'm going to, but you have to listen to a whole other show, and you have to you have to get through so many other spoiler kind of, you know, kind of gates before we get to that. And there's some genuinely shocking moments in this that I don't want to, you know, even allude to, you know, saying,
I know Ben feels the same way, but this Dark Souls 3 is certainly within our statute of limitations, spoiler wise.
yeah,
it's been out forever.
So it's, you know, it is a little bit like that. I'm looking forward to my second playthrough. So my first time, I ended up I fell ass backwards into a dexterity build with kind of pyromancy as a like an accent skill kind of thing. This time I'm kind of leaning into a little bit of strength, and I want to really play up the battle arts kind of thing. So have I described this, or do you know what the battle arts are?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So battle arts are kind of like latent skills that are hidden in your weapon, kind of like Final Fantasy 4/2 or whatever.
I don't understand. Could you explain which one you mean?
Where if you're two-handing a weapon, or if you're wielding specific shields that let you do this, pressing the left shoulder button, not the left bumper, but the left shoulder button, will cause you to go into like a stance to ready a particular skill, and then you can fire it off, and it's like it is a move that takes your mana or your focus points, your FP, and it does kind of like special stuff. So it's either something that like changes your stance and gives you extra poise, all the way up to like, here is a whip that turns into fire when you crack it. Something like that. Yeah. So like,
I was about to ask if you had any gimmick builds in mind. It sounds like that's the answer.
Yes. There are a ton of these, and it's really varied. There are a lot of them where like, if this is just a mundane weapon, like if this is a great sword, you're going to be doing the stomp move a lot. But like I have the Uchigatana, which is kind of the katana, in the Dark Souls series. And like that move, like has you do almost like a quick draw kind of thing with it. Like you sheath the weapon and you go into a stance, and then you I don't know exactly how the timing works, but you do like this dashing upward slice with it. And it's actually been really helpful in PvP, because nobody knows exactly when you're going to attack, and because it comes out so quick, they know that you're poised for it, but they can't really like decide when to dodge. So I'm really excited about just kind of like playing around with that, and like strength is easy mode for these games, so you know I'm going to try and offset that with like a little bit of like faith casting kind of stuff, like rolling as a knight. But that is a cool mechanic that kind of brings it's a little bit like what D&D 4th edition did for melee builds, giving them stuff that is almost like the equivalent of spells.
Nice. Now, is there any kind of nod to this existing in the game's tutorial or anything like that, or do they just leave it up to the fans to discover?
It's one of those things where, like, every weapon description says what its battle art is going to be.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So you just have to look up. Like, there's probably a soapstone message in the tutorial that tells you how, like, ready those. But because your starting builds are so varied, not everybody's going to be able to use those right out the gate.
Huh.
Yeah. Any other questions about Dark Souls 3?
No, but it sounds neato.
Yeah. Let's see here. The other thing is, been continuing playing Silent Hill 4. Those playthroughs are going up on YouTube, and I'm getting to the point where I'm like, yeah, this, the back half of this game is such a slog. And it sucks because that's also where they introduce some really cool ideas, right? So if you've played previous Silent Hill games, you know that like they have this world, other world section, okay, kind of like rhythm, right? Mm-hmm. So you have like, okay, here's the hospital, then here's the dark hospital, here's the school, here's the dark school. In Silent Hill 4, they don't do that. It's not like A-B-A-B. It is A-B-C-D, A-B-C-D. So you reach the halfway point of the game. You find this person that you're trying to save, right? It's your neighbor who you've been creeping on. You rescue her from the hospital. And then in order to get to the bottom of the mystery, you basically start back at the beginning of the game in slightly darker versions of the regular maps that you've gone through before. And there are two things that are different. First, you are dealing with kind of boss versions of these invincible ghosts that are actually the victims that died in the previous go around. So each chapter ends with somebody that you found there dying. And then when you come back to these places, they have turned into like a ghost victim that's invincible. All you can do is pin them down with special items, and they have like special attacks. So like the woman from the subway chapter turns into a Ringu, that can like wrap you up with her hair and, you know, like kind of, mangle your movement skill a little bit. And that's a real bummer because most of that level is a maze through like subway cars.
Oh no.
And that varies up, and they also accumulate. So if you don't deal with them with these finite items that you have to use, they can just follow you from world to world.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So there's
got to be like a challenger to this where you finish with like all however many trailing you.
Yep. Yeah. So you can get to the end and you can have like five ghosts like hot on your ass.
nice.
And that those are just the boss ones. There are the regular ones that are also invincible and can also phase through walls.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you're dealing with that. The other thing that you're dealing with is, since you rescued this, this person, Eileen, from the hospital after the kind of the main antagonist, attempted to murder her, she's all beat up. So she has a broken arm. She's kind of limping, and you have to escort her. And as she takes damage, like her curse meter builds up, and that has a direct effect on the ending that you get.
Like she just says shit a whole bunch when she takes damage.
Yeah, fuck. Why'd you hit me? Asshole. No. But that impacts the ending. So she can't exactly die, but like her wounds will get deeper and more pronounced, more angry, and she will start like babbling in tongues, and as her curse meter builds up, she can actually read this garbled text. So there's like a benefit to having her a little bit cursed. But so it's like the back half of the game is a little bit of an escort mission. But oh man, I said this was going to be short, didn't I? But that it changed, like the fact that she can't go up and down ladders and she has these certain limitations changes kind of the topography of the different levels. So like instead of just like running to the end of the subway platform and going down the ladder that's there, she says, I can't get here. I can't do that. You have to proceed through the rest of the level to get to where Cynthia, the woman, died in this stage, get her kind of like universal like skeleton key pass, and then circle all the way back around to the level, grab her, and then run her back around again.
Yikes.
Yeah. And so it's super tense. Like I was down to the wire if you're watching this, and like I totally see a little bit of what they're going for and being like, oh, there is horror and fatigue, but it's like, man, oh man, is this just incredibly hostile. And
I've missed like every single one of your streams because yeah. I've been doing other stuff, but I'm like, damn it, every time.
I stream it a bunch of different times just because like I don't know. You know, I don't have the knowledge. Like, I don't know what the Twitch best practice is. Do you set up like an appointment where people can choose to make it? Like, I would almost rather be like, okay, I'm going to stream it like 6 my time, you know, one of these. I'm going to stream it like 9 and then just hope that people are available for it. I'm sorry that you've had to miss.
No, if you want to be popular, go ahead.
Well, and I was going to pretty much just make the comment I've made many times before, which is, unfortunately, although I know you archive these things, mm-hmm. I don't watch anything unless I'm like interacting. So like if I'm watching you and you're playing and I can like type a comment and you see it 20 minutes later, that's fine. But like if I'm sitting there for 20 minutes just watching it, knowing that I can't type to you and you eventually reply to me, mm-hmm. I won't watch it. Yeah. It's the same time frame sitting there, but mm-hmm. it's very different for me. So.
Yeah, and there's nothing I can do about that.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's like if I miss it, I miss it, and that's the end of the story. Yeah. So I'll catch the next game you play.
Yeah, Dennis, it sounds like you're about to give me some hot advice.
Yeah, which is if you want to be popular on Twitch, you have to be streaming basically 24/7.
Jesus, I can't do
like
that.
The people. Well, yeah, no, the people who have followings are on all the time.
There are people that I've seen that have like a streaming schedule set up and mm-hmm. they just post a streaming schedule and say on these days at these times, I'll be streaming this game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, with enough advance warning, then it's like, okay, well, then I know I can go do my run now and then I can come back and, you know, maybe go catch some of it or whatever.
Yeah. Let's do this. If you have an opinion about this, because I want to make sure that this streaming serves somebody, you know, like I've gotten kind of low viewership. That's not really the point. Like I just kind of want to play these cool games and talk about them as I go. And that is a nice way to do it. But like if there's a better way that I can serve you by like making this, you know, either a little bit more deliberate or something like that, I worry, you know, my concern about putting it at like a scheduled time is that it will start feeling like a job as opposed to something that is like, hey, yeah. I have 2 hours to kill. So,
yeah.
You know, and also I like to keep I like to keep my hard commitments down because any time can fill with a recording commitment, you know, so it's just hard to manage that. But like let me know if like even just like one session a week that was at a regular time would be good, I suppose.
Well, and then too, I mean, even if it was like, okay, I'm more likely to stream on these days, then that's at least some kind of a head up, you know, like mm-hmm. for me, I'm not going to stream until it's probably Friday, Saturday or Sunday. Most likely I could stream another time, but most of the time, if I'm streaming, it's going to be one of those days.
Yeah.
You know, that's me, but you know, like that's, you know, open-ended. It's not mm-hmm. An obligation to stream on those days. Just.
Yeah. But for me, it's like, oh, I have this miraculous 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's me. Who wants to go next?
I can go.
Oh.
Ben,
I was like, this is
going
to be an easy one. Ben never volunteers, and then he does it. I feel like I have first for that reason.
Mine's just, I've had a really light week. Just Rocket League, Stardew Valley, and I picked up Risk Legacy for on Steam. It just came out. Or no, sorry, Twilight Struggle, not Risk Legacy.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Mixing up my board games. I only played it once. It was fine. I still think the website's better, but I'll still play it a couple more times to see if I like the Steam version of it.
Can you? Oh, wow. So I didn't even know this is moving so fast, Ben.
I'm sorry.
I didn't know that they had ported it to PC in any particular way. What's the difference between the website version and Steam version?
Yeah, so there's a website version right now. It's the website's called Chantry Games, and despite having a generic name like that, the only game that they have is Twilight Struggle. But it's like a lobby setup where you can post a game and then other people can accept it or, you know, choose to be in it and then you can accept it. You can set all the configurations for the game. So there's optional cards you can play with. There's points advantages that you can set at the beginning. Like either US will get a points advantage or USSR will get a point advantage. Mm-hmm. So all those things are in both versions of the game. The only difference is the computer version is kind of like a play-by-mail sort of thing where it's like you make a move and it'll prompt the other person.
But, oh, it's like asynchronous.
Yeah, so the other person can make a move whenever they want to, you know, on their own time. So ideally, you'd be playing at the same time and just have a little bit of wait time between moves. But, you know, if you have to think about a move or if somebody has to leave or something, you can do that and come back to it.
Yeah, it's. I just did a search. That sounds like that sounds like an iOS ass game. I was wondering if it's a port. Like, that is not on iOS. Like, how do you know if somebody made a move? Do you just have to check every time?
Yeah. If you go to like every user like has a home screen or whatever, and so it'll say like what games are waiting on them or what games aren't. The Steam version has a timer, a move timer, so you can set like, okay, let's play an hour game. So each side will have 30 minutes. So when it's your turn, it's like chess, where your timer is going down, and then when it's your opponent's turn, their timer goes down. So you can win by either winning out the game, or you can win on account of time. So,
yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
I'm intrigued by these board games translated to computer.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of art, and there's a lot of pretty animations, I guess, but I'm not sure if functionally it's better than the website. So.
Yeah.
There's another one of these, you know, board games that live on a computer called Gremlins Inc. that's gotten really well reviewed.
Okay.
And I've actually been eyeing it, so maybe at some point we'll have to check that out together if you're interested in doing some board games online.
Yeah.
Okay.
For people who aren't familiar with Twilight Struggle, can you give kind of a back of the box version of
it's like a Cold War simulator? It's a 2-player board game. Where you're basically reliving the events of the Cold War through different cards. The mechanic of the game is it's a card playing game. So each round, each player will have 8 or 9 cards and they'll play 6 or 7 actions per round. And then the actions will either be dictating where the influence on the world is, on like the map of the world will have different countries involved in the Cold War. And U.S. can put influence in each country and USSR can put influence in each country. And there's kind of rules governing how you can do that. And then there's scoring. The scoring is based on how much influence you have in each of these territories. And scoring is determined by cards as well that are randomly distributed throughout the deck.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. I had a lot of fun playing this with you. And you did a very good job of explaining it. I'm curious. I'm very curious about this.
And just for fun, if any of the listeners ever play, you should get a Russian Imperial Stout and an American style like farmhouse ale or something like that to push the theme.
Yeah. Each of you gets drunk in your own way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. Anything else, Ben?
No. Besides those other games I mentioned, that's it. So same old, same old. Yeah.
Cool. And Dennis, how about you? Fire off.
Yeah. First off, if you're in Steam, the application, how the hell do you copy out a link for the page to send it to someone? Because I want to send this to Ben, and I have no idea how to do it.
Oh, it used to be that there was like very obviously like a URL that you could copy.
Yeah.
underneath like store and library.
Yeah. I was like, oh, Steam is just a web browser, but I think they wanted to get away from that.
All right. Gremlins Inc. Anyway, yeah, sorry.
I'll look it up.
I've been playing two games. The first one is one I'm always playing, which is Hearthstone. I've talked on previous episodes about how there's about to be an expansion, which means what's out there right now is really kind of stale. So I've been looking for entertaining things to do. And so I kind of set out a challenge for myself, to build three decks in the same class without repeating any cards between decks, and then to win three games in a row, one with each deck.
Are you randomizing it? Like, are you figuring out a way to pick which one you start with? Like,
No, I went actually by which one I thought I would have the hardest time winning with. And then, you know, on to the strongest deck.
Yeah.
Just that way. Although it turned out, my guess turned out to be wrong.
Oh.
So I did a very, and it's really interesting because every class in Hearthstone has these kind of staple cards that just show up in every deck, right? Like if you're a rogue, you're probably running Preparation, or if you're a mage, you're probably running Fireball, or, you know, on and on and on. And so limiting yourself to having to pick, like, okay, I can only put this in one of my three decks, which one is it, was a really interesting thought exercise. And then, you know, do I go all in on one deck and just have it, you know, the exact way I want it and know I can win with it and then build the other two around that? Or do I try to spread the love? What cards do I replace the, you know, the staple cards with in the other two decks? It was a lot of fun to create them.
You don't want to staple your cards. That disqualifies you from most tournament play.
Well, and in the case of Hearthstone, it actually puts a staple in your computer screen, which is very bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I wound up with three variants on Druid decks, and managed after about 15 games to pull off three wins in a row, one with each. So set out the challenge for myself, completed it. I'm brainstorming on what other classes might be good to do this with. But then again, Standard is going to hit the 26th, which is the new expansion is going to hit the 26th. So I'll have interesting stuff to do then. Will probably distract me from it. But I live streamed it. I have the recordings on YouTube for anyone who's interested. It was a really good time.
Yeah. Yay. What's your YouTube address for people who are curious about seeing those?
It is GreenLaser06.
Yeah.
So one of the many variants on GreenLaser that I use. Cool. So that's Hearthstone. And then the other game I've been playing is Tokyo Jungle. I went back to.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the, like, you know, survival slash arcade game where you play as completely random animals wandering around a post-apocalyptic Tokyo that's been completely destroyed and reclaimed by nature. And, well, I guess rather than I played it, I should say Luke played it. So I was looking for a game that I was like, what's a good game that I can put a controller in his hands and just let him move some stuff around on screen? I was like, cute puppies, of course, Tokyo Jungle.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of fun to introduce him to actually controlling a game. And he kind of got it. Like, he moved the left stick to move the guy around. He found the jump button and thought that was fantastic. That's about as far as we got.
Yeah.
He found the right stick is like a dash button. And so once he found that, he dashed everywhere instead of moving with the left stick.
But he was doing it with intentionality. Like, he was responding to what happened on screen.
Mostly just like, it was clear he understood that he was influencing what was happening on screen, but he was not pursuing an objective. He's just like, right. Oh, I can make this, you know, react.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's fine. And it was really fun to watch him play with that. The one drawback is that, you know, because it's a survival game, you have hunger if you don't eat. And so eventually,
he has to watch that Pomeranian die.
Exactly. Yeah, like the screen goes red and a big dead pops up. And so I was like, oh, that's no good. And the worst offender, though, is that the time to actually restart a game on that is heinous. Like the result screen has to load forever for some reason. And then the main menu screen always has the cinematic that plays that's annoying. And so the game is not very well designed from that perspective. So what I decided was like, okay, I'll, you know, if he gets low on hunger, I will, you know, just eat something as the little Pomeranian to keep him in the game. And so we got to that point, and I forgot that it's actually kind of a vicious game once you get into combat. This Pomeranian just, like, taking out rabbits and chickens in a very blood spatter kind of way.
Oh, wow.
Nature, man.
Yeah, I was like, that was a bad decision.
He's got to learn sometime.
Yeah. Let's go pacifist. Let's go a grazing animal. I'll spawn him in as a deer. He likes deers. He knows what those are. Like, let's do that.
Uh-oh.
Except I forgot that now that adds a bunch of predators that chase you into the world, and he again watched his character die.
Wow. Oops.
So, yeah, I might continue looking for the game to play, but that was a really fun experience. It did get me to then I went back later and just tried a couple actual runs myself because I'd kind of fallen off the game. And I'm very impressed at how it always keeps the next thing to do well in front of you.
Hmm.
Like there's always that next goal that kind of pops up right as you accomplish your last goal. It's all contingent on how long you've been alive. So it's not like you do A and then B and then C. It's these objectives kind of pop up after certain amounts of time, which allows you to have a constant stream of stuff to do without feeling like the game is kind of linear. You can still explore. You can still go wherever you want. You can ignore the quest objectives, but there will always be something for you to do kind of coming up next.
Hmm.
And the meat of the game is as different areas will go toxic at different times, and you kind of have to stay away from those areas or get out or get through them very quickly. And then, you know, more areas go toxic the longer you're alive. Because apparently when all humans disappear, that makes things worse for the environment, not better. I'm not sure how that works.
I mean, all the shit that we left around, like, I imagine if humans weren't around to, like, tend the reactors, things would get bad pretty quick. You're welcome, nature.
Yeah, you're welcome, nature. It does make plants have purple bubbles pop up over them, so that was kind of cool. That's our contribution to nature. But I have a feeling that there's a pattern to how the areas go toxic. And then I've definitely seen areas get less toxic, but I'm not sure yet what influences that one way or another. So I feel like the ability to really master the game hinges on me being able to figure out what exactly the weather, like the macro weather patterns are, which for, you know, a game about animal survival, that feels pretty in place. So well done there.
Adaptability. Yeah.
Exactly. I just haven't quite cracked that piece of it yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, fun times with Tokyo Jungle. Hopefully I did not traumatize Luke too bad.
He's terrified of deer, as he should be.
Yeah.
Never trust a Pomeranian.
Well, that's true. They're kind of yappy.
Although when you mate and change generations, they let out a howl like the largest, most visceral dog you've ever seen. So.
Yeah. Huh. Like a dog that's full of a bunch of organs.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Those dogs with their organs.
Ugh, the worst.
It's worse than those monkeys with their organs.
They're funny. And it's the man who has the organ, the monkey dances, and maybe plays a little melodica.
Is it the man who has the organ? Or is it truly the monkey that has the man?
I think that the monkey is manipulating the man, like some kind of gigantic puppet, like the old man from Men in Black.
Yes.
There's another monkey inside the man.
It's monkeys all the way down.
Yeah. Baseball and monkeys all the way down.
Yeah.
Huh. Anything else?
No, those are the two.
Cool. Well, yeah, let's button it.
Mm-hmm.
You think? Yeah, let's do it. Thank you so much for listening to level 147. We're coming up on the old 150, and that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jolly, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, cool. I hadn't heard you in a bit. There we go. Yeah. So thank you, everybody. If you're new to the show, thanks for giving us a shot. We are very happy to have you here. If you want to help out this particular show and help make sure that it takes part in the upswell across the network from this crazy bonfireside chat heat that we got, ratings and reviews on iTunes are always helpful and appreciated. And sharing us with your friends, sharing us on Twitter and all of that. All of it goes a very long way, as does liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Otherwise, just enjoy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm Jolichon in places.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah, and stick around to hear us choose a title. Okay, who has ones that they want to throw in?
None.
I have two.
Okay.
Deported to Flavor Country.
All right.
And Baseball and Monkeys All the Way Down.
Okay. Jolly, you had none. Dennis, how about you?
I had Baseball and Monkeys All the Way Down as well. But I like Deported to Flavor Country.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, here are the ones that I have just for posterity. Kerbalian Space Project, Baseball All Around. And this one is in parentheses, Skeleton Laugh.
It's a very well-executed skeleton laugh, by the way.
I know, that was awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. You say it was quite piquant. Is that what you said, Dennis?
No.
Okay.
I felt compelled to comment.
Ah, okay. All right. I also had Deported to Flavor Country. I had Your Welcome Nature and Baseball and Monkeys All the Way Down. I like Deported to Flavor Country as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boom. Easy winner.
Cool.